strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things.
I walked in town on silver spurs, the jingle too, a song that I had only sang to just a few. She saw my silver spurs and said, let's pass some time, and I will give to you summer wine. Oh, summer
vinyl. Yes, I'll give to you summer vinyl. My name's John A. Tate, and you're listening to 3CR. You've just had a bit of the Salaam radio show for a couple of hours. I've been sitting here waiting because I'm live. I'm sitting here in the studio live presenting a show about music and vinyl records and other stuff. This is episode 2, and we're going to be talking a lot of Circus Oz and Circus Oz-related songs. Because I've got, I'll be getting someone on the line for an interview, a fellow called Jesse Jensen Cole, who I met a few weeks ago, and he's just written a book. It's called From the Pram, it's called Circus Oz, From the Pram to the World Stage. And those of you who know a bit about Circus Oz will know that the Pram Factory was one of the early places where it was all happening and building into eventually Circus Oz. So that's what's planned. I've got a couple of songs to play first, and once they're over, I'll probably have Jesse on the line and I'll explain why I've actually played these particular songs.
I'm living in the 70s. I feel like I lost my keys. I got Joe!
Oh, come
place where no one ever knows your face. A glass of wine, a fast embrace. You're in Hernando's Heroin Bowling. All you see are silhouettes, and all you hear are castanets. And no one cares how late it gets. Not at Hernando's Heroin Bowling. Golden Finger Ball or any place you go, you'll meet your Uncle Max and everyone you know. But if you go to the spot that I am thinking of, you will be free to gaze at me and talk of love. Just lock the time and Miss Malone. By Joe, and strike a match, and you will know you're in Hernando's Hideaway Bowling.
Monsieur, madame, put your hands together and one better man.
Yeah.
I'm back in black here in the studios of 3CR, 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy, and I'm hoping I'll be joined by Jesse. Are you there, Jesse?
I am indeed.
Hello. Hooray! I always get a bit anxious about the technology, sitting here by myself. Could you hear those songs I was just playing?
I could indeed, yes.
All right, well, you can help me back announce what we've just had. So who was that last one that we just heard?
I do believe that was it was definitely Krista Hughes. Was it Machine Gun Fellatio?
No, this was one of her solo things.
That was hers, yeah.
From the album.
Krista Hughes.
Oh, yeah, Krista Hughes and the Honky Tonk Shonks.
Fantastic.
Doing one of the best covers of AC/DC's Back in Black. I just love it.
It was very good.
So that's Krista. Well, maybe we might mention... oh, I'll mention it now. So why is Krista Hughes relevant to the Circus Oz story?
So, Krista Hughes was one of the MCs, ringmasters of the show for about, I think she did two, three years in that role. And so she played a quite important role both in the show and the development around 2006 to 2009.
Now, I'm going to have to start off with an apology. We're going to play another Krista Hughes song later on, when I left home, the last thing I said was, I won't need my laptop today. But, of course, I did need my laptop because I had a Krista Hughes song that you asked me to find.
Yeah.
So we haven't got it.
Famous last words.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And the other one, which we were going to talk about as well. But we can still talk about that. We just won't play it for people.
Yeah.
Before Krista Hughes doing her version of Back in Black, we had Captain Matchbox Whoopi Band, Hernando's Hideaway. Why are they relevant to the Circus Oz story?
So the Captain Matchbox Whoopi Band was quite significant. They were the first band as part of not only Circus Oz, the original band members were a reiteration of the original Captain Matchbox Band. And
yeah, so that song, Hernando's Hideaway, was from their... second album, Wangaratta Wahini, which predates Circus Oz, but still, they're relevant.
Well, they are, because that would have been when they were contributing to Soapbox Circus as part of the ABG, Australian Performing Group. Yes, very, very relevant.
But I do have the Soapbox Circus and APG single I promised. I'll do that later.
Great.
I didn't leave everything at home. And before that, I don't know if you heard that one, before that I just played a bit of Living in the 70s by Skyhooks, because the beginning of the Circus Oz story is back in the 70s, and Skyhooks have a bit of a relevance as well.
They do, yeah. So same again, the Soapbox Circus, which formed Circus Oz, they teamed up with New Circus from Adelaide and created Circus Oz, but... the Soapbox Circus based in Melbourne, came out of the Australian Performing Group, and Red Simons was also one of the people involved, and he, of course, was in the Skyhooks.
And the very earliest version of the Skyhooks was Red Simons, not Shirley Strawn at that stage, but they were probably performing as Skyhooks or maybe a different name at the same time as Red was involved with, you know, the Pram Factory and stuff. Is that right?
Absolutely. I heard that, because the Pram Factory was also a performance space as well. And as part of my research, I interviewed a lot of people from that era, and they said that Skyhooks used to play in the back room and do gigs there. So, yeah.
So there you go. So that was a good opening to the show. I thought I'll play those three as I got you on the line. And a lot of other famous names that people would recognise were involved at one point or another. I'm thinking Greg Pickhaver.
Absolutely, yeah.
People might know by a different name.
H.G. Nelson.
That's right. So what was his involvement in the early days?
So, he came from Adelaide and came over and was involved in the theatre movement, the New Wave theatre movement, fresh out of university. He was actually inspired by circus because he saw, and sorry, Greg, if I get this wrong, I think it was the Great Moscow Circus, or it might have been the Ashton Circus.
Yeah.
And he just fell in love with this dedication to a physical activity, but also that it being theatrical, and he felt like that was something he wanted to pursue, was this not your mainstream type of theatre, but also he told me that he wasn't that good at sport, and so he felt like, which is ironic considering where he's from, and admirer of sport, but he said he didn't have the aptitude. But he liked the performativity, and also it must have been the Moscow Circus, because he was talking about that they had a national circus school in Moscow, and he just really loved that intense dedication to something so physical. So he moved to Melbourne and then became part of the APG at the Pram Factory.
As an actor, mainly?
Well, they did a bit of everything. They were quite eclectic in their interests. So, yes, he did acting. He was involved with the night shift theatre based on the New York style, very gritty, very late night kind of experimental theatre. And he was one of the original members of Soapbox Circus as well, just before Mick Conway came along and it became a bit more of a condensed circus performance.
Now, as you know, I'm a bit of a fan of Mick Conway and Jim Conway and the whole Matchbox thing, because I co-authored a book on them called Captain Matchbox and Beyond.
I'm looking at it right now.
We were looking at for somebody to help us launch it, you know, someone well-known. So we did two launches, one in Melbourne and one in Sydney. And the Sydney launch, we managed to get Greg Pickhaver to come and help us launch it. And he said, yes, he said, I'll do it as long as I can do it as H.G. Nelson. I said, absolutely, that would be great. So it was during the footy season, and he hopped up on stage, and he had his phone in his hand, and he says, right, we'll begin with a cricket score, Collingwood at the MCG, and he gave us the cricket scores, the footy scores.
Fantastic.
I mean.
Fantastic.
I thought, yeah, that was typical of him. Many well-known authors were involved in the early days, such as, playwright, what was his name, Williamson?
Williamson, yep. I'm turning a blank.
So am I. I should have written these names down.
that's my job.
Helen Garner was involved in the early days as a writer.
Who wrote Monkey Grip.
Yeah.
Very, very influential book.
And is still writing stuff, you know.
Yes, she is.
All right, let's turn the camera around on you.
Okay.
So, why did you write a book on Circus Oz?
Well, there's two sides to that. The first being that when I started my master's research at a university and trying to look at circus arts and do a project based on circus, I thought, as part of my methodology, interview practitioners, the concept of it was the motivations of contemporary circus artists in Australia and why they choose to take up circus arts. And I thought an easy way to argue that they're professional contemporary circus artists was that they would all have worked for Circus Oz at some stage. And I thought that'd be a very easy way to argue my point. And what I discovered is just how little had been written about the company Circus Oz, which certainly anecdotally I was aware of its influence on Australian circus.
Yeah.
And so once I finished my master's and I passed that, when I came to Sydney University and wanted to do my PhD, I knew that writing the history of the company was going to be what was needed to continue circus studies, particularly in Australia, but internationally as well, is that their story needed to be told.
So when you're writing a PhD, you really need a topic that's going to contribute to the general general library of the country,
field,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Something that hasn't been done before and something that contributes to the written
to the
written
field of
bank.
Study. Yes, absolutely, yeah. So, you can. There are obviously very niche topics that come up at university, and depending on the discipline, they can seem quite quite overtly specific. But absolutely, in terms of the field of study, and so mine was in performance studies, and I was able to look into a form of performance that performance studies hadn't really seen much of. And again, the not only the informative way Circus Oz helped create what we call contemporary circus internationally, but also that so many things tied into what my colleagues were already aware of, that being New Wave Theatre. The APG were playing with Meyerhold and Brecht and Dada and Surrealism and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it absolutely came out of a very strong theory base that they were manipulating their media. And then to then see where Circus Oz took it was just as informative to a lot of my colleagues and, I believe, a good contribution to the field of study.
So you've mentioned the term a few times, contemporary circus.
Mm.
How is that different to, you know, the great Moscow circus that we might be, and things like that that we're aware of?
Well, that is a constant discussion in the literature. The short answer is what you're describing with Moscow circus is what's commonly called traditional circus. And the short answer is traditional circus is the tented, traveling, usually with animals type of show. The contemporary circus is more the type of circus that you're going to see at fringe festivals and in theatres and such. But what's really interesting is, like, again, it started in the 1970s, and so it's nearly 50 years old now. You're starting to see a lot of crossover. There's a lot of traditional that's now coming into contemporary circus, both aesthetically and also skills transferring a lot more. And also because of places like the National Institute of Circus Arts in Melbourne, a lot of students are now finding contracts in traditional circuses, because there's still a number of traditional circuses in Australia. And so the traditional circuses are looking a lot more like contemporary, and contemporary is looking a lot more. My belief is that we're going to see it all kind of meld back into what could just be circus. And that's happened over and over again for, you know, hundreds of years, watching it divide. They had Nouveau Circus in France, and then it just kind of became circus again. It's just the new reiteration.
Every now and then, I think it's every year, the circus comes to Airport West, where I live, and it's in the car park of the Westfield Shopping Centre there. And they used to have camels. There were camels, you know, feeding on the grass at the side of the car park, and maybe a few horses, but less and less animals. But, you know, it's still a circus and it's going round. I reckon I have memories of going to Circus Oz way back in the 70s, probably late 70s maybe. I'm pretty sure it was on the banks of the Yarra. Maybe it was part of Moomba, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you certainly might have been at the first performance in 1978, Moomba Festival.
Yeah, could be, I don't know. But it was in a tent.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time I was a bit surprised because the people I bought the tickets from at the front, I saw in the show as the show was going. I'm not sure what they did, but I thought, that's weird. But I guess that was one of their unique things. I remember a few of the performances. There was a guy who stacked chairs and climbed up on them and did a handstand on the top or something. That was amazing.
That would have been Tim Caldwell in the chair stacking act,
And the guy who walked across the ceiling upside down. I remember that one.
Yeah, the roof walk act, again, with Tim Caldwell.
Same guy. That was amazing. And then I'm pretty sure there were a bit of trapeze as well. And lots of other stuff, but I don't remember the other stuff. But I do remember there was a band playing, could have been Matchbox, yep. but, you know, I wasn't aware of them at that stage. But there were certainly musicians playing. And then, I think maybe towards the end, some of the musicians jumped off stage and took part in building a pyramid, a human pyramid.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that was, I wrote that in my PhD, talking about how something that was very unique to Circus Oz specifically was that they, and again, this kind of comes from their origins of being at the Pram Factory in the APG, that, like I said about Greg Pickhaver, nobody had one role. They were against the idea of having a strict director, strict actors, strict producers, and so on and so forth. But they really wanted everybody to do something. So when they went on tour and they had Georgina Sparks or Georgina Carson, who was the mechanic and did a lot of the rigging, she also ended up on stage at some point. And the lighting person also did it. And like you said, the performers would usher and they would welcome. And the whole concept was, it was kind of playing with the, to think of it academically, talking about framing theory, which is the kind of thinking about when does the performance actually start?
Because
it's not just the curtain going up, it's also finding your way to the events, and you're getting excited and you have pre-drinks with friends beforehand. And so it all comes down to seeing the poster is when the performance starts, because that's when the excitement starts to build. And they were playing that on a smaller scale where they would sell you a ticket and they'll basically go, this is our tent, this is our home, this is where we live, this is what we do for our work, playing with that whole art, work, lifestyle blends all into one. And that continued in band members being circus artists and circus artists being band members. So in one act, you can have, because they traditionally have 12 people in the ensemble, three would be musicians and the others would be acrobats. And so in one act, you could have a 12-person pyramid, like you witnessed, or you could have a 12-person band. And you could play with that, and different acts could have different people play. So they really merged that whole concept of what is one's role in the show and in the company, which was very unique to Circus Oz, and it's still quite unique to Circus Oz as far as I can see.
And it's what Mick Conway loved about it, because even though he was the leader of the band, he loved learning the tricks, learning little acrobatic things that he could manage, learning juggling, learning a bit of magic, and which he still performs today.
Well, he did,
Have you?
I had the opportunity to interview him specifically on Circus Oz, which was fantastic. And he, as you pointed, the Matchbox was only in there for about a year, because then they had a tour that they already had confirmed. And the band were really getting into, because of course Matchbox had quite a following all around Australia, and they were on Countdown, and they were quite well known. And the band members, once it got reformed as Matchbox and they were working for Circus Oz, one hand, it was quite tough for them, because they, of course, needed to have quite specific finger movements playing guitar, but they were also, everybody was putting up the tent, quite possibly that day before the performance. And so when you're banging in tent pegs all day, your hands get sore, you get calluses where you don't necessarily want them, and you're exhausted. And so they felt like they couldn't quite cook as a band if they were also doing this heavy work and had so much weight on them to be a good band. So most of the band went, this is really fun, Mick, but let's go and continue our tour and see how far we can take Matchbox. And Mick unfortunately felt that he loved it. He wanted to keep going with Circus Oz, but he could see that Circus Oz would be perfectly fine and they will continue without him. However, him and Jim Conway, Matchbox wouldn't be quite the same without having Mick as the frontman of the band. So he felt like emotionally he had to go with Matchbox and leave Circus Oz.
Yes, it broke his heart, because I think shortly after that, Circus Oz got the invitation to travel internationally and perform. So he missed out on all that.
Pretty much just before that. that. Yeah, they went to Papua New Guinea and then they did a European tour. Then they came back kind of already as this internationally well-known Australian circus company. But there's also huge influences that Mick did. One of my favourite things, once I realised Mick was involved, when I ushered for Circus Oz and I got to see it every night, it's tradition that at the end they introduce all the performers and they say, "You've been watching Circus Oz." And there was just something about that intonation that once I worked out as Mick, I'm like, that's him. That's still him. That's still the intonation of Mick being the... Because he has such an amazing voice. He has such an amazing voice as the announcer and playing with that vaudeville circus. For the first time ever, you're going to see da-da-da-da. You know, he has that such and great...
His family had a history in vaudeville, so it was in
that's
his blood.
Right, yeah.
He loved
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And opera singing, so he had that baritone
yeah.
voice.
Yeah, that's right. All right, listen, I'm going to... speaking of Matchbox, I'm going to play that song. I've got side A. If I can't have Anna in Cuba, I think I'll siesta in Spain.
Yeah,
and it's officially their Matchbox and the APG. What does APG stand for?
Australian Performing Group. So they're the ones who set up in the Pram Factory.
There you go. All right, so I'll play this. I'm going to put you on mute so mm-hmm. that you don't interfere with the music. And
I might sing along, so yes, a good idea.
Oh, God, yeah, I'll put you on mute. And if everything goes well, I'll have you back in 3 minutes or so.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I remember long ago at me favourite picture show how I used to roll me jaffers down the aisle. I can't do it anymore. They've put carpet on the floor and the jaffers get caught up in the shag pile. But there's more to life than movies and the orange-faced Scooby and the rich duck center still is so sublime. Oh, you can't roll your jaffers in the aisles anymore, but you can still have a rattling good time.
That's today the matinees, tomorrow the world.
You can still have a rattling good time.
Are you there, Jesse?
Yes.
Okay, so as I got in here a little bit early and I was just doing a little bit of a search on our extensive database, and I found that Jaffers commercial.
Yeah, fantastic.
This is a commercial, community radio. We don't do commercials, but that one was in the system, so I played it. Do you remember that ad on TV?
I don't, unfortunately. I love it, though.
Oh, it's hilarious. So Captain Matchbox, they really weren't interested in commercial stuff. You know, they were quite alternative in a sense, but in the life of every band, you run out of money and you need you need to somehow scramble some dollars together. So they did this ad for Jaffers, and you know the Jaffers, the little chocolate lollies,
yeah.
Orange-covered balls. And back in the old days of theatres, they didn't have carpet on the floor, and people, kids used to roll their Jaffers down the aisle and annoy everybody with the noise. So that's what they did for the ad. They set it in a theatre. But you can't roll them down the aisle anymore because they put carpet on the floors.
You still have a ruddy good time.
Yeah.
I love that.
It was good. It was a good ad. But before that, we played If I Can't Have Anna in Havana, I'll See Siesta in Spain. Typical of Matchbox, though, they love taking those old silly tunes from the 30s jazz and stuff like that and giving it a contemporary feel. But this is radio, so we only get to hear the sound. If our listeners go to YouTube and try to find the video for that song, what will they see?
So they filmed the video clip to that with Soapbox Circus, and so during the video clip, while they're performing, they have the acrobats doing a whole lot of juggling and acrobatics in front of them, and a lot of the puppets that were a big part of both Circus Oz and Soapbox Circus and the APG. It was while the Soapbox Circus was touring with Matchbox, and it was in the Balmain Town Hall when they recorded that.
And that was the thing, wasn't it, with this whole contemporary circus thing? The music and the performances and the circus skills were all meant to be happening at the same time. But there were difficulties with that, weren't there?
Doing it all simultaneously?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, something that was quite significant, I was thinking, is the fact that when Soapbox Circus and New Circus in their own right took on circus, it was because it was during an era where performance studies in university was really thinking about cultural performance, and there were theories arising that every culture actually has performance. And then they started looking at performance in a different way, which was the forming of how we see performance studies now, and that really we have social performance, we have everything that we interact with. You and I are performing now, we're playing roles. I'm you're the interviewer, I'm the interviewee, and we play these roles as we do it. And for a lot of them, things were being raised, questioning performance and looking at football as being a type of cultural performance, the church being a type of cultural performance. And so for a lot of them, and certainly Tim Caldwell, when he formed New Circus in Adelaide, they thought, well, circus is a way that we could legitimately communicate and perform. And so that was a revival of the thing. And what you're saying about the ushers and the mixing the ushers, ticket sales, all that sort of stuff that's having performers is actually a traditional circus thing as well,
that you
could,
okay.
Because of course you try and tour with as few people as possible because you can't afford to take too many people. So you'd often have the flying trapeze artist with a jacket on, but full makeup, and he's selling a ticket, and then performing, or the sitting people, and then performing later on, and then they would come out and sell trinkets in the interval and stuff like that. And likewise, in the past, before even motor cars and before, certainly before internet and radio, the best way a lot of communities in Australia and Europe and America was waiting for a circus to come to town, because they would play the latest jazz music, the latest vaudeville music, town hall music. And so what? So yes, the contemporary circus and primarily Circus Oz doing contemporary music in their performance was both an innovation, because circus in the 1970s was getting a little tired, and with animal rights, animal liberation and whatnot, it was kind of frowned upon at that point. And a lot of companies weren't making that much money, so they didn't have live music. They had pre-recorded cassette tapes, and you just didn't get the same vibe. So when they reintroduced circus, they kind of brought back a lot of things that was considered traditional circus, like playing contemporary music. But that's what really hooks on to the generations watching it, is that this was this chaotic thing. You have Matchbox, as you said, playing even songs that aren't pop. It's not pop music, because they're doing jug band music and washboards and harmonicas and really playing with the form, even making people question what is pop music, what is contemporary music.
Yes, no one knew quite where to fit it all in. Hey, listen, let's come back to you. So you mentioned ushering a few times. So that was your first experience of being in a circus, true?
Not quite. So I said two main influences why I took on Circus Oz as a topic. One was I discovered how little had been written. The other was I'm a circus performer by trade. I went to a circus. I went to Sir Kids when I was a teenager, and I could unicycle and juggle. And then I went freelance. And I was aware of Circus Oz as the major circus company of Australia, but they hadn't come to Adelaide, which is where I was living at the time I grew up. And in 2004, they came to Adelaide for the Adelaide Arts Festival, set up the tents, and I latched onto all my connections to see if I could volunteer and sweep the floors or something like that.
Do anything.
And a friend of a friend of mine was the tour manager, and she said, well, we need an usher. So for 2 weeks, I ushered and watched the show and just went, yep, I get it. This is amazing. This is an amazing company that I've never seen the likes of before. So that was my first experience. Then 2 years later, I actually travelled with the tents. I put up the tents and took down the tent and ushered during the season. I did that for a year and travelled around Australia with them.
And you've done circus stuff with other organisations?
Yeah. So, again, I'm a product of contemporary circus. I did corporate gigs. I juggled and unicycled at the Adelaide Cup once a year and radio stations, Christmas parties, and all that sort of stuff. But I performed for a few companies around the place, become more freelance performer as a acrobat and juggler. And then I turned towards education and helped set up the Sydney Sphere School in 2008 and worked there as a head instructor and artistic director for 9 years before I got an opportunity to a master's degree. Then the rest I told.
Yeah. Hey, listen, in the book there are amazing photos. It's a large format book. I don't know what you call this one, but it's about approximately the same size as a 12 by 12 inch LP record. That's slightly rectangular. So it's a big book with a lot of text, great information about Circus Oz and all the byproducts and everything. But the photos are amazing. You mentioned, you know, unicycles and juggling, and it's all here. A few of the photos have your credit next to them, but a lot of them don't.
No, a majority of them are by one of the founding members, Ponch Hawkes, who's an amazing, prolific artist, activist, and photographer. And she's one of the founding members. She was at the APG. She's one of the Soapbox Circus people and was one of the founding members of Circus Oz. And then up until very recently, she's been the official photographer of the company. So you've got behind she's just followed and would do the behind the scenes and the official photography for the posters. And she was so kind. And I contacted and asked her. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to schedule an interview with her because my book is both my PhD and my book is full of first-hand accounts. Yeah. So I used oral history as the main way of doing it. I didn't get to interview her, but I really wanted her to be a part of the book. So I asked her if she would give some of her photos to the book. And she said, if you can come to Melbourne and scan them, you can have as many as you want. And so she just allowed me to access her whole catalogue of photos for the last 45 years. It was amazing.
And the publisher, Melbourne Books, they're very good with this sort of thing. I remember with ours, he said, see how many photos you can get. And I assumed he'd probably pick, 20 or 30 photos.
Yes.
But he put them all in. And it looks like he's done the same thing here. He's just included every photo, and they're brilliant.
Yeah, the designer at Melbourne Books, Holly, did an amazing job fitting it all in. I ended up sending them about 300 images. And that was me selecting the best of that Ponch gave me. And so, I'm not too sure. I'm sure I have a number there so at the back of how many photos ended up in it. But I was really fortunate. And it really, it's such a visual medium, right?
Yep.
Like, if it's just the words, you get an idea of what's going on. But you can, like, the fact that she has this catalogue of following the history of it, you can talk about the APG and there's photos from the APG era. You can talk about Soapbox. You can talk about all these things, and the photos pretty much line up and correspond with what I'm discussing as we go through the history.
And not just photos. A lot of the images, especially down the back, are the posters.
Mm-hmm.
Going from the Last Laugh Theatre Restaurant, Soapbox Circus, all the way through.
Mm.
They're brilliant.
Yeah, and like I was saying about the idea of when does the show start, the communication of a poster, particularly a circus poster, is so significant. And what I love about the images, a lot of your listeners are probably aware of the work of Martin Sharp, Reg Mombassa, and Michael Callaghan were three of the major poster artists. And it's not just artists who do posters, they're poster artists as well as other forms and other media. But what I love is, when you see these images, a lot of them don't have people. They don't use photography. It's silkscreen technique. It's stylized. It's a bold typeface. It's just Circus Oz, Wentworth Park on this date. But somehow they give you an idea. Like, you look at these posters, you look at these images, and it feels like Circus Oz without seeing anything literal. It just has the feeling of the era, of what they're performing, the joy, the chaos. That changed in the late 90s because of computers and graphic design and this idea of a media mix with other advertising materials and stuff like that. But certainly the 80s up into the late 90s, and so they started bringing it a little bit back towards the 2010s, trying to use photography but in a more artistic reinterpretation way. But those early posters are so breathtaking when you see them, and so joyous.
Okay, one last question. You better bring us up to date. Circus Oz, are they still going? What's happening now?
Absolutely, they are. They're currently in New York at the New Victory Theatre. They've had, I think it was a 3-week season over Christmas. They've downsized quite a bit. There was a bit of an difficulty with a certain administration that happens, and so they got huge. They had a huge building, they had training, they had classes, and they got to be a really quite big company.
I've been in that building. It was incredible.
It's a fantastic. So they're still there. They're not a big enough company to be the caretakers of the building. So Flying Fruit Fly Circus, a sister company of Circus Oz, has taken the reins of the building and doing classes and whatnot. But Circus Oz still has their lease. They still live there. That's still the home of Circus Oz. And currently they've gone back to basics. They've gone back to, which I quite like. I like the guerrilla nature of Circus Oz. So it's back to a small crew, small artistic team, two band members and some amazing circus artists performing with them, and it's chaotic and it's fun and it's joyous and it's everything I believe Circus Oz is all about.
Thanks for speaking to us about it, and thanks doing the book, because it's unique and it's something that needed to be done. It's called Circus Oz, From the Pram to the World Stage. Your name's Jesse Jensen Cole. Did I pronounce that right?
You did. Well done.
Publishers Melbourne Books. It was launched just a short while ago, so it's brand new. Go and find it in the shops and buy one. And even if you can't afford to buy a book, I always say to people, go to your library, ask them to get this book in. Right, this is a book I want, and the library they'll order it in if they get a request. And every time someone borrows your book from the library, a little bit of library rights trickle down to you.
Exactly. I'm an advocate. Go to your library. It helps the authors. I don't think many people are aware of that. When you borrow a book, it actually, you are supporting the author. Downloading a PDF doesn't. Go to a library and hire it for free.
Libraries are great. So that's the thing. Anyway, thanks, Jesse. It was great meeting you a couple of weeks ago.
My pleasure, John.
We could have talked for hours. There's so much in the book. But hopefully we've given people a taste of what it's all about.
Yes.
And they'll go out and do something about it.
Yeah,
and,
wonderful.
I've got someone coming into the studio in about 5 minutes, so I need to tidy up my mess here. play a few songs, and then I'll be out of here. All right, so I'll catch you around next time you're down in Melbourne. Maybe we'll catch up somewhere. And,
fantastic, John.
And we'll have
some
Melbourne coffee.
Yes, it sounds always good.
Thanks, Jesse. Thank you.
Thanks
very much.
Bye-bye.
Justice, diversity, community, politics, sport.
Join us every Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m.
No. We now start at 3:30 for an hour.
For the Sporting Record.
Or check out the Sporting Record podcasts available on Spotify, Apple, 3cr.org, wherever.
Baseball. Basketball.
And then I turned around and all my friends were laughing. such a heel, but I had to break it off, and I regretted it. I felt so sorry, and somehow I'd like to get our relationship back on an equal footing. And you know, these are the words that I heard coming down.
You've been listening to Summer Vinyl. that was the B-side of the Matchbox and APG single, a song about a fellow with a shoe fetish called Chiropodist Shop. Once again, that was Mick Conway vocals. So we focused today on the Circus Oz book. I recommend you go out and get it. It's a great book. Beautifully made from Melbourne Books. You can always go straight to the publisher, you know, and order it straight from him. They'll send it to you, they'll post it to you, and there you go, you've got it. All right, I'm tuning out. We've got Let the Bands Play coming up, and I might just play out a little bit of Juggling Time, Captain Matchbox. See you next week.